Good evening and welcome to the May edition of Council Connection. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. It's springtime in New England, or at least I think it is. It seemed like that a couple of weeks ago, now I'm not so sure. But maybe before the end of this month, the warm weather will be back. We can always hope, can't we? There's lots going on this month. We'll be diving into some alphabet soup. We'll hear from the keynote speaker at this year's annual BSCB banquet. We'll talk with BSCB student president Daisy Russell about a fascinating trip she's planning to take to Nicaragua. But we'll start the show with Diana Leonard telling us about an event put on by the BSCB students. Hi, Diana. Good to have you back on Council Connection. It's been a while since you've been here.
I know, Steve. Thanks for having me. I'm really glad to, you know, be able to do this and to be able to talk more about the students.
When you were on here last, you were president of the organization, right?
Yeah, I definitely was. Now Daisy Russell is the president, and she's doing a fantastic job.
That's good.
And I'm still sitting on the board as the immediate past president, but I'm also just a regular board member.
You guys have got something going that's kind of interesting this month.
Yeah, this coming Saturday, May 6th, I had to think for a second about the date.
That's all right.
We're having a movie night at the Carroll Center in their tech building. We will be watching an audio-described version of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which is a spin-off of the Harry Potter series.
Okay.
Set in 1920s New York City.
Ah.
I haven't seen it yet, so this will be a surprise for me, but I know kind of the gist of it. It's about a wizard who comes to America through the UK. And he has a briefcase with him filled with a bunch of magical creatures. And the briefcase, I think, is lost, and they all get loose in the city. And he and some other wizards, American wizards, go on an adventure to try and find them.
Ah, okay. And, of course, that's audio described, right?
Yep. Daisy was able to get in touch with the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library, and we currently have the DVD, and it's all
great.
Good to go.
Great. Oh, that's terrific. And do you have the address for the...
The address for the Carroll Center is 770 Center Street in Newton. I don't think the tech building has its own separate address, but... from what I remember, it's fairly easy to find.
Okay. Well, we'll give out the address we have and hope that nobody gets lost.
Yep.
Yeah. So just to digress for a minute here, what's been going on with students in the last few months? Anything we should know about or anything that is exciting?
Well, we had our annual summit at the Bay State Spring Convention in Burlington, and we did some shuffling around. We had some re-elections. Daisy is still president, as I mentioned earlier.
Yep.
Our new vice president is Lena Coral. Carrie Schooler is our secretary, and Phil Fernandez is the treasurer and also webmaster.
Ah, okay. Got PJ in charge of the money and the web.
Yep.
Well, that's a good thing. He's, I don't know how he is with money, but I know he's pretty good with the web because, of course, he's helping us too.
Yeah, he does a pretty good job with that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good. I wish you a great deal of success in your movie night. I'm hoping you're going to get a lot of response to that. It sounds like it should be entertaining and a lot of fun.
Yeah, we have an event for it on Facebook through the BSCB Students Facebook group. There's been a good small handful of people who have said yes. A few people said maybe. I had sent out an email to the Bay State announce list. And
I saw that.
Someone called me today while I was at work who heard about it on some tape that they received from MCB.
Oh.
I guess that it made its way over to that.
Okay.
And they... we're RSVPing. So basically,
good.
We're just trying to get a head count for everybody by Friday or Saturday morning.
Ah, okay. So you're right up to the day of.
Yeah.
You're willing. Well, that's good because some events, the window closes before that and people don't always know if they're going to make it.
Right. Well, we had also really put this event in motion a week or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we figured that, you know, to give everybody more ample time to get themselves situated, book the ride, do whatever they need to do.
Right.
that, you know, it's better to extend the RSVP.
Absolutely. And just in case anybody didn't see the announcement and didn't get the tape, would you give your email and contact number again so if people want to call you, they can?
Yeah. My email is my first name, Diana, D-I-A-N-N-A, period, like a dot, the letter L, the number 93 at gmail.com.
Okay.
And my phone number is 978-886-3308. And that's my personal cell phone, so no worry about any random person picking up. It's going to be me.
Okay. And if you don't pick up, it'll be your voice.
Don't pick up, it's my voice on the greeting. And if I don't answer you right away, I will call you back. So don't worry.
Well, that's great. Well, Diana, thanks for joining us on Council Connection tonight. And I think it's going to be a fun time on Saturday for everybody.
I do, too. Thanks for having me, Steve.
You're welcome. If you want to attend movie night, you've got one more day to sign up. And you can contact Diana Leonard by phone at 978-886-3308 or by email at diana.l93@gmail.com. That's diana.l93@gmail.com. The movie begins promptly at 6 o'clock, so don't be late. And the address for the Carroll Center is 770 Center Street in Newton. It's the Tech Building. And I understand there'll be a raffle at the end of the movie, so bring your wallet. And bring your appetite, because there'll also be homemade popcorn, courtesy of Brian Charleston and Rick Morin. And speaking of noteworthy events, the BSCB Social Committee will be sponsoring a trip to the Watertown Riverfront Park and Braille Trail on Saturday, May 20th from 10 a.m. to noon. If you're interested in signing up for that or want to know more about it, please contact Jerry Barrier at 508-734-4420 or email jerry@birdblind.org. That's J-E-R-R-Y. At birdblind.org. Please let Jerry know by May 10th if you're planning to attend so he can arrange for a sufficient number of volunteers to be available. And finally, on our calendar of events for this month, you've got one more day to sign up for the first meeting of the Massachusetts Association of Diabetics. For more information, contact Bonnie Adams at 617-277-2358, or you can call Kathy Devon at 617-472-0308. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, and you're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. Our next guest is about to embark on a journey that most of us would find a bit daunting. Here's Daisy Russell to tell us what she's got planned. Good evening, Daisy. Glad to have you here again on Council Connection. It's been a while.
Thank you.
I think last time we had you on this show, you were in high school, weren't you?
I was, yeah. That
yeah.
was a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. Lots happened since then. Mm-hmm. You're at college, right?
Yep.
And which school is that?
Wheelock College.
Okay.
And I'm finishing my sophomore year.
And because everybody always asks you this kind of thing, what's your major? Or do you have one yet?
I am double majoring in educational studies and humanities literature and getting a minor in creative writing.
Gee, doesn't seem like you're busy at all.
Nope.
Nope, not at all. And in addition to that, you've got kind of an interesting project that you've started. You want to tell us about that?
I would love to. I'm going on a trip on May 20th for 2 weeks. A few students who go to Wheelock and a couple of the professors are volunteering with Outreach 360 in Jinotega, Nicaragua, for 2 weeks.
Mm.
And we're going to go there and teach English at a learning center there and work at a sort of camp program for one of the weeks as well.
Okay. Now, how did you hear about this?
Well, in one of the 50 emails I get per day from Wheelock, I happened to notice that there was an email about service learning trip opportunities and things like that. So I looked into it. I saw that some people were going to Nicaragua. I looked into it. I thought it sounded great, but then I had some reservations. I've never been out of the country before, and all those various things that can kind of hold you back from doing something like that. And then,
now, of course, language wasn't a problem for you, was it? Because you've taken some Spanish. At least you did in high school, yes. I think.
And yes, I've taken a lot of Spanish courses, and then they also offered a Spanish course here this semester that I took as well.
Okay.
The language wasn't a huge deal. It was more going into a country I'd never been to before, doing what I wasn't sure what we'd be doing, things like that. So
yeah, that would bother me. I don't know how I'd handle that.
And then I ended up talking to a professor who I had last semester. And she was going on the trip and knew a lot about it. So I was able to talk to her about a lot of my concerns and get those straightened out. And she really thought I would, you know, be able to do it, visual impairment or not. So I started up the application and applied and got accepted. And then it was just a long, long process of fundraising and applying for a passport and, you know, taking the course to get ready.
Yep. And, of course, you've got all that passport stuff taken care of because they're not going to let you in there if you don't have that.
Yes, I got my passport. It's very shiny. When I got it in the mail, I wasn't sure if the little piece of paper was the passport or the book thing was the passport. So
yeah,
I had someone clear
yes,
that up.
Yes, and usually what they do is they give you you've got the big book, and then you've got a smaller version of that you can put in a wallet or in your pocket or something while you're traveling, because you don't want to be carrying that big book around with you. So now, in addition to the teaching of English, I understand there's another part of this project too. Some Braille books are involved, or have I been hearing things that I don't know anything about?
No, you're correct, actually. So another professor who's going, who I know very well, has been volunteering with Outreach 360 in Nicaragua for a while, and she came up to me one day and informed me that she had gone to a school for the blind in Nicaragua, which I thought was extremely fascinating. So,
yeah, I didn't even realize they had any.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either. So I did some research into it, and she told me more about it. And we decided that while we're in Nicaragua, she and I are going to make a point of going to visit. Mm-hmm. And then I started collecting Braille books, thinking I could, you know, donate some children's Braille books and go visit them. And that would just be a very unique experience, especially where I'm visually impaired. And
sure. I mean, what a great way to be kind of a role model. Well, I don't know if role model is the right word, but an example of the fact that somebody from another country can be a successful student. Now, have you been able to get all of the books that you were hoping to get?
I actually got a really pretty big donation of books from the Perkins Library.
So ah, okay.
That was really generous of them, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah. So it's not like you're really looking for additional books at this point, right?
I mean, donations are always welcome, but we're also on a little bit of a time crunch because we're leaving in 2 weeks from this Saturday. So.
Well, yeah, and you've got to ship all those. What are you going to do, ship those ahead or just bring them with you?
We're going to bring them with us in a bag because most airlines, if you're bringing donated items, they'll let you check it for free.
Oh, I didn't know that.
At least that's what we're hoping.
Well, yeah, that's what they told you now. Let's see what happens when you get there. So, as you said, all donations are welcome. So I guess if people and you know that this, of course, is being broadcast not only here on Council Connection, but it will be aired on ACB Radio. So there's a good chance that other people around the country may want to send some more books your way. So how would they do that?
I guess they could always send them to the college itself. It would be 150 Riverway in Boston, and then it would be care of Daisy Russell.
So you're going to be doing all this traveling now, and I'm wondering, are you going to be reporting on it or blogging about it or doing anything like that?
Yes. So actually, I have been given the title of official blogmaster for the trip. So my contribution to sort of documenting the trip will be doing a series of blogs, 5 to 6, about certain topics, especially to do with WeLock-related things, such as like the experience there, what it's like to teach English, how we made the lessons engaging, and a lot of things like that. So that will be posted on WeLock College's website.
Okay.
And then I'm also planning to do, instead of doing just pictures, which I won't be able to look at later and
right.
know what they are of, I'm going to do brief videos in which I'll have someone describe what's in the video so that I can look at them later and post them online for people to see.
Oh, great.
So,
and they'll be part of the blog too? Or
They may be.
Yeah.
They might just stick with just pictures for the blog, but I personally am going to keep those videos and do something interesting with them.
Well, yeah, because that's your that's your photo gallery of the trip, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so if people want to read that, what would they have to do?
Once all those blogs are posted, it would be on WeLock's website, which is www.welock.edu.
Okay.
And they're on there somewhere.
Yeah. And they won't, they probably won't be there till after you get back, right?
Probably not. Cause I'm going to be doing some writing on the trip, some writing before the trip, and some writing after the trip.
Yeah, I got a feeling it's mostly going to be before and after. Cause I think once you're there, you're going to be just so busy. You won't have time to write anything.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I wish you an incredible amount of, good luck on this trip. I think it's going to be a fantastic learning experience for you. Just
mm-hmm.
the traveling alone, even if you didn't do anything else. And I'm hoping that when you get back, you will want to stop by the show again and report to us what happened and how it went.
That'd be great.
Well, that would be absolutely terrific. And, of course, you know, this is in addition to everything else, school and president of BSCB students. And, you know, it's just terrific, I think, what you're doing here. And I want to thank you for joining us tonight and telling us all about it. And hopefully you'll get a few more books out of this deal. And even if you don't, it'll still be a great trip.
Yes, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Daisy. Take care. You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit www.acbofma.org and look for the Council Connection. Anyone who's ever had any dealings with government agencies, and that includes most of us, knows about the alphabet soup that is a big part of it. And Donna has had plenty of experience over the years in that department, and she's here to help us sort out some of it. Ann?
Everybody has acronyms in life, or our alphabet soup terms, or whatever you want to call them. They're everywhere. So I've got lots more where these came from, believe me. But these are a few in our lives as blind people or people with disabilities. I mean, I remember when I first started going to the rehab council meetings, I mean, like, D-E-S-E, oh, God, what is that? I mean, and I finally, I think my biggest passion when being on the rehab board, rehab council, excuse me, is that any consumer can come in and read a lot of these documents. So let's make sure that they're understandable to anybody, not just somebody with a policy degree or a social work degree or whatever degree you have. So I'm going to start out, and I have a few this morning. So let's everybody take a nice deep breath, wake up, and let's go. So the first one. All right, you guys are smart. Somebody just call out the answer. Okay, so we're going to go with ADA. Oh, you are a smart group. You've been listening hard all this weekend. All right. Do you remember when that law was passed? 90. All right. There you go. Okay. Now, the next one is CRC. It's not Charles River Chapter. Okay. CRC, Certified Rehabilitation Counselor. And don't be afraid to ask your counselor if you see a term that's after their name, what is that certification? What does that mean? Because you have a right to know as a consumer. Okay. The next one, and I bet you guys know this one, IPE. Individualized Plan for Employment. That was what I had in mind. I think some people know it as the VR plan, and then it changed over to IPE. Okay, the next one you've heard this weekend is PRE-ETS.
Ah, yes.
PRE-ETS. Pre-Employment Transitional Services. All right. All right. And my last one today, you can't pronounce this as one thing, like, one acronym altogether, but anyway, WIOA. You can't say WIOA anymore. You have to say WIOA. There you go. You guys are so smart. A Work Innovation Opportunities Act. Okay? Thank you very much.
That was Ann Donna dipping into a little bit of alphabet soup. Now let's return to our annual BSCB banquet, which was held this year on March 25th at the Burlington Marriott Hotel. Here's BSCB President Brian Charlson to introduce the keynote speaker.
I'd like to introduce to you this evening our speaker, Blair Wong, who is Blind Employee of the Year in Massachusetts and now our very fine banquet speaker. Please join me in welcoming to the microphone.
Well, good evening, everyone. Are you having a great time? Congratulations to all of the award recipients. That was really special. That's great. Well, I certainly am honored and privileged to be here in your presence tonight. And thank you, President Charlton, for giving the explanation of how I was chosen to be the keynote speaker, because I really wasn't sure. I read the program, and it said the keynote speaker would be fun, motivational, inspirational. And I think you were talking about my brother, Bruce. My brother, Bruce, also is a recipient of the Employee of the Year Award at the Carroll Center. And oddly enough, he owns this hotel. If you saw my brother's presentation, his acceptance speech that evening, he is the only recipient of that award to play a video of him ballroom dancing with his wife, which is at this very hotel. And he is very charismatic, and he is a great speaker. And I hope that you don't have the wrong Wong here tonight. But anyway, I do feel very honored and privileged to be here before you tonight. You are a very special group. And it is true that I work in the sighted world. I'm a blind person working in the sighted world. And boy, do I really work in the sighted world. I am a blind optician, which means that I am a living oxymoron. People see me with my white cane walking around the city of Boston every day, and they ask me, so what kind of work do you do? They're fascinated to know, what can a blind person do for work? And I tell them that I'm a professor of eye care at two different colleges. At the Ben Franklin Institute of Technology on Berkeley Street, I am the department chair of the opticianry program. And I am an adjunct professor at the New England College of Optometry. And they go, wow, so that's why you got into eye care, because you're blind. And actually, it's one of those ironies in life. I had always wanted all my life to be involved in eye care. And I graduated from opticianry school in 1980. And at the age of 26, being very passionate about patient care in clinical settings for both optometry and opticianry, I learned on the same day, along with my brother Bruce, that we had retinitis pigmentosa. This disease, this horrible disease that would lead to blindness. And I remember that day well. It was a very difficult day. But as difficult of a day as it was for me and my brother, it was even more of a difficult day for our parents. And so I remember shortly thereafter, I think I slept for about 3 months. And I was single at the time, and I thought, you know, I think that I'm not going to date for a while. And I kind of made that decision because I didn't want to be a burden to someone who I fell in love with and married and all that kind of thing. And fortunately, after about 3 years of not dating, my love for women overtook my feeling of not being a burden. And I'm here tonight with my rock support, my beautiful wife, Jean, who have been married now for, it's going to be 24 years and a couple years in June. And Jean brought me to my senses. And one of the best things about, one of the blessings about being blind is, Jean, physically, in my mind, is as beautiful as the day we got married. And each day, she's even more and more beautiful in terms of being my better half, for sure. I have found many creative ways over the years to be a creative ways to be a burden to Jean, other than my vision loss. Probably the most burdensome is I have no vision left in my left eye, and just a little bit of a tiny tunnel down the right that's about 20/70, and that's just enough to still be able to tell her how to drive. We have a beautiful son, Evan. He's 21. And I think ever since he was born and learned to walk, he's been my sighted guide. And he is really amazing in terms of we hike together, we can climb mountains, we do whatever it takes. And one of the most courageous things that we do together is ever since he learned how to play baseball, we have a passion. How could you not have a passion living in Boston, right? We have a passion for sports, and we play catch. And once my vision really began to become a problem, he would roll the ball back to me, and then I would whip it as far as I could. And he'd go and catch the fly ball and bring it back to me, and I basically throw it as hard and as far until my arm felt like it was going to fall off, and he would chase it down. And to this, well, we'll see this summer when he comes home from college. Every summer we push the limits with my vision. And we used to always love to I pitch and he hits. And I, in high school, loved baseball, and I had a pretty good fastball. And so each summer, as my progression has taken place, we test limits, which means we go to a tennis court down the street. We take a pizza box and we tie it to the fence. I stand 60 feet, 6 inches away, and he stands off to the side, and he watches me to see if I can hit the heart of the pizza box. I could still do it last summer. He then steps into the batter's box and says, "What can you see? Can you still see the batter, the pizza box?" And I said, "Yes. I have no idea where you are." So when I say this is a test of courage, I don't know if it's my courage to throw the feeder into the pizza box without knowing where he is, or his courage to stand in the batter box as I throw my fastball. So I zip it in there. It hits the pizza box. I say, "How's that? Can I throw it harder?" He said, "Dad, you can throw it as hard as you want. Even if you hit me, it's not going to hurt me." Oh, ho, ho. That's bringing it on, Evan. So we could do that last summer. What else can I tell you about my family? I love my parents, God rest their souls. And my dad moved out to California after my mom passed away. And being out in the California, the West Coast, the real West Coast, he called me one day and said, "Hey, come on out here. I have the cure for RP. And I said, "Really?" Met a doctor, chiropractor, who can cure RP by adjusting your neck. Wow. You know, and California, anything's possible. I was warned by my doctors, don't fall into these, you know, these scams. But I went anyway. And we tried to get Bruce to go. But Bruce is a pharmacist. So, chiropractor versus medicine, no chance. But I went out regularly to see my dad to get my treatments, probably every 6 months for about 3 years. And shortly thereafter, my dad passed away at the age of 80. And I tell you, those 3 years that I saw him on a regular basis after he had moved to the West Coast was the most enriching experience that I could have a son with a father who felt terribly awful. Any parent would feel awful for feeling responsible for passing on a genetic disease. And so it did him wonders to be able to feel like he could do something for me. And no, my RP didn't get cured, but boy, is my neck feeling great. It was a great moment, though, for my dad, and I truly love those that time that I spent with him. I am the, as an optician, I belong to many different organizations, the NAO, the OAA, the OAM, the NFOS, the COA, and all of those acronyms have in common the letter O because they're all involved with eye care. I am very involved. I travel all over the country lecturing on eye care topics, and I teach at two different schools, and I do a lot of volunteerism for my profession. And am I so thankful to everyone in the room who has worked so hard on my behalf to train me with assistive technology, to provide mobility training, and allow me to continue to do the work that I do. I just want to talk a moment about my relationship with doctors in life. I have always been the worst patient. And I don't mean that I'm a bad patient. I mean that, well, I was an acute asthmatic as a kid. And for Dr. Baylitt and Dr. Mary Margaret Blair, by the way, I was introducing myself to one of your members this evening. And they said, oh, Blair, that's a nice name. Not when you were thinking it was going to be Mary Margaret. So I was named after Mary Margaret's last name. And I was one of the worst asthmatics in Massachusetts when I was a kid. I did not go to school until I was in the seventh grade. I was homeschooled all those previous years because I basically was living in a sterile environment and sometimes even in an oxygen tent. Then I have the worst allergies. Dr. Steinberg will tell you that I am his worst allergy case. And basically, although some of those things add up, and another reason why I'm not sure why I'm up here is because I don't read Braille. I'm not the most skilled person in the room using JAWS. I'm not even the most elegant person in the room using a cane, and I'm allergic to dogs. So I'm a bad blind person. Then I had double bypass surgery, and I was very fortunate to have a new robotic technique in which they did the bypass through a 3-inch incision in between my ribs. That was amazing. And my doctor said, you have the worst lungs, the tightest lungs to work with. And I do need to be serious for just a moment with the passing last week of Dr. Elliot Burson, who is my RP doctor, and I know that he had such a great influence on so many people in the room. Dr. Burson, just a true, dedicated doctor. I had a special relationship with him, too. Not that I was the worst RP patient, but I was one of the rare RP patients who had white spiculation. And he always knew that there was a possibility that black spiculation was not necessarily always indicative of RP. And he said, Blair, you have finally proved my suspicions right because you have white spiculation. Boy, did I feel special because I had RP. I had the pleasure last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, of taking a self-defense class way out west in Worcester. And there I met Mary. Mary, are you in the room somewhere? Hi, Mary. Stay away from Mary and I. Okay? We know how to defend ourselves. We were going around the room introducing ourselves, and it's so strange sometimes being in a, what we call VIP group, visually impaired persons. And we're saying our name and our disease. So it was so-and-so in RP, so-and-so in RP, so-and-so in macular degeneration, and so-and-so in retinitis, retinal dystrophy, and I almost wanted to say, I'm Blair, and I'm tall, dark, and handsome. Who would know, you know? And I actually am, for those of you who haven't seen me. I'm more like Antonio Banderas is what I look like. And if you've never seen Antonio Banderas, he's as suave and debonair as his name sounds. So anyway, Mary said, because she didn't have RP, gee, that's so strange. I feel somewhat out of it because I'm the only one in the room who doesn't have RP. And I didn't realize that RP was an elite group of visual impairment. And I felt, wow, you know, it's when you're comparing darkness, there's nothing like midnight blackness compared to pitch darkness, you know? So thank you, Mary, for making me really feel special that we're part of the RP group. I love using the cane. Oh, one story about Dr. Burson that I'd like to share. He always had a habit, and I always felt a little bit uneasy till I got used to it, of he always had interns in the room, and he would always speak to the interns like I wasn't in the room. So he'd say, I remember when Bruce and I first got our diagnosis, and Bruce and I looked at one another, did we hear this right? Retinitis pigmentosa, we're both going to be blind by the time we're 56. And everybody, you could hear a pin drop. And Bruce and I looked at one another, and in typical Wong sick humor fashion, we said to one another, you and I both? Well, I guess that's going to be like the blind leading the blind. And everybody laughed because, you know, sometimes in the most difficult moments, Bruce and I always use laughter as a little bit of a relief. And Dr. Burson turns to his intern and said, like we weren't there, they're joking. They made a joke. Isn't that an interesting response? You know? I remember another time where I used to see him every 2 years for my ERGs, and it had been 5 years. Blair, why haven't you been here in such a long time? And I said, well, the last time you examined me, you told me that my ERG level was flatline and I didn't need to come and have the test done anymore. And he turned to his technician and said, I said something and he interpreted it totally wrong. And I said, wow, this is so strange. But I realized he's a teaching guy, right? And sometimes I always thought he was a little bit cold. But he's always teaching interns to carry on the research after his time is there. And so I said, I don't have to have an emotional relationship with Dr. Burson because he's totally dedicated to his research. And at that visit, he said, hey, by the way, how's your son Evan doing? And I said, he's doing great. How old is he? 8 years old. Do you know that I can do a test on kids after six to see if they have RP? And I said, that's great. Gene and I spoke to Evan, and Evan said, let's do it. At 8 years old, he's talking like a 40-year-old, by the way. And so we went in and had Evan tested. And Gene was with Evan in the room as he was getting his perimetry test. And it's painful for the technicians who do a perimetry test on somebody who's got RP because you're supposed to press the buzzer every time you see that light, right? And it goes beep, beep, beep. Well, Gene was listening for Evan doing it because Gene's been in the room when I was doing the test for every year, and Evan was going beep, 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 beep. And he did really well on all the tests. And at the end of the day, Dr. Burson has his consultation on the results of the exams. And even before Gene and I had a chance to sit in our seats, he put his hands together and said, Evan is one of the good ones. He's one of the good ones. And for the first time in I don't know how many years I've been seeing Dr. Burson, I had an awakening moment, and I could really understand him now and grow to love him. He showed raw emotion when he put his hands together and said, Evan is one of the good ones. And I understand now that, and I understood at that moment, it was a moment of clarity, that here's a guy who spends 99% of his life working in a hospital, hearing the bad news and delivering the bad news. It's not like a typical doctor at my college of optometry or my opticians, which is exactly the opposite. 99 of their patients are great patients. They just need some fine-tuning of their acuity. And now I got to see him in a moment in which he was able to deliver good news. Sometimes you got to distance yourself from your patients so that you don't get emotionally attached and you can continue to do the research that needs to be done. And I totally understand that now. And it was a special moment for me. And I teach that moment every day to my students at both schools that I teach. So that's my Dr. Burson story. God rest his soul. I believe in the power of the cane. I love the cane. I walk throughout the city every day with the cane, and there's not a day that goes by that I don't receive a random act of kindness from a stranger to show me to a seat on the train, to help me cross an intersection. Today, to get through some scaffolding that I did not expect on my route to the college. I'm really blessed. And Mark Twain said, there are two most important days in your life, the day that you're born and the day you find out why. And I thought that maybe it was being an optician and providing people who normally 85% of their experience with the world is through their sight. And then I found out that I myself was losing my vision, and I explore the reason why I was born. And now I'm an educator to eye care professionals and bringing awareness to both the profession and to the city of Boston, because I think one of my blessings in life is to bring out the best in Bostonians every day. We're Northerners, we're supposed to be cold, but I can tell you the power of the cane really brings forth a lot of love. Just maybe two stories. A couple years ago, we had the most horrendous blizzards, right? And trying to get across the city in those intersections with the snow piles were incredible. And one day I was coming out of Back Bay Station and waiting for a cab. There wasn't even traffic in the streets. And a guy came by and he said, are you trying to catch a cab? And I said, yes. And he said, I am too. And I haven't seen a cab in half an hour. And I said, oh, gee, okay. And he said, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to the New England College of Optometry. And he said, do you mind if I walk with you? And I said, are you going in that direction? And he said, oh, yes, I am. So we walked through the city. We walked down sidewalks, got all the way down to the end of the sidewalk, and realized we couldn't cross the intersection because the piles were too high at the intersection. I had to walk all the way back and then walk through the street. It took us 45 minutes to do what normally would be a 20-minute walk. And it was the most amazing walk I've ever had. He's from Paris. He's working in Boston. managing a clothing store, and he told me about his life, and I shared with him my life, and it was just an amazing day. I commute home from Boston every night, sometimes on the 9 o'clock train. And 4 years ago, I was helped to a seat on the train by a gentleman. The next night, I'm taking the same train, and a gentleman comes to me on the platform and says, "Hey, can I help you find a seat again tonight?" And I realize it's the same person who helped me the night before. And I said, "That's great. Thank you very much." And we got to be chatting, and his name's Deneb. And turned out that he is a ninth grader at the Commonwealth School. And he graduates in May. And we see one another probably every few months, our paths cross. And we're so excited to see one another and share what's happening in our lives. We're like best friends now. And that's a cool story. Every day I think of the word skimp. Doesn't really exist because I spell it S-C-I-M-P. It's not with a K. And it's an acronym that I keep in my head, and it helps me get through the day. And I think a lot of what I've learned tonight through the presentations by President Charlton and the awards, that SKIMP pertains a lot to the mission of this association. The S in SKIMP stands for failure, and the C stands for trepidation. The I stands for dependent. The M stands for award and recognition, and the P stands for negative. And you're probably thinking, "Boy, Blair, are you a bad speller?" But what I've learned is not to be so tough on myself. I've been trained for mobility by the Mass Commission and by the Carroll Center, and I've been learning assistive technology in many different ways. I need to embrace certain things before I can be successful. So the S, which I said for failure, is I accept failure because I will learn from failure. And that will lead eventually to success. The C stands for trepidation because I'm always a little bit insecure. I'm always a little bit in fear or trepidation when I get up in the morning and I wonder, how am I going to make it into Boston and to my destination today? And I embrace that feeling of trepidation. I don't let it imprison me and keep me in my home. But I embrace it so that I can rely upon my learned skills and navigate the world and walk with confidence. I've learned to embrace being dependent. I am being trained to be independent, but not so independent that I don't recognize that I welcome the help of others. So when someone offers their help, even if I don't need it, I say, "Thank you, I would love the help crossing the intersection." Because you know why? That person, it took them courage to offer that help. And who am I to turn that down? And a lot of times when I've accepted the help, I introduce myself, we have a nice chat. You know, Blair, I've seen you traveling into the city for a whole year now, and I've always wanted to help you, but didn't know if I should ask. And today was the day. And I said, "Well, you just made my day." And that person says, "No, you made my day." And I know that. I know that by allowing someone to help me, by allowing myself to be dependent, allows me, one, to be able to do this going into the city on my own, but also empowering that person to be kind so that they can be kind to others. The lesson here tonight for M, which is awards and recognition. I've received many awards too, and the awards are nice, and the recognition is nice. But what I truly love about awards and recognition, kind of like their monuments, is not so much the monument, but the fact that we're all doing something monumental. And that's what is so important about the awards and recognition. And P is for N, which is for positive. It's easy to have negative thoughts. It's easy to be scared. It's easy to become frustrated. But I always have to learn to see the silver lining. As I journey into darkness, I still envision in my brain seeing light. And by seeing light, that helps me to see brightness. And by seeing brightness, anything's possible. It's better to think positively and not be stuck in negative thoughts, because it just gets in the way of me being able to accomplish what I need to accomplish. So that's how I think about SCIMP. And lastly, I really owe a debt of thanks to those of you in the room who are the doctors, who are the dedicated trainers, who are the dedicated advocates, and those of you who are my colleagues as VIPs. I really owe you all a debt of gratitude for allowing me to be here in your presence tonight. And I'm really tickled to be your keynote speaker. I think, again, of the two most important days in your life are the day you're born and the day that you find out why. And all of those organizations that I belong to, I just joined the new one 2 weeks ago, and it doesn't even have an O in it. It has a B. And I think I'm one of the newest members of the Bay State Council of the Blind. Thank you very much, everyone.
Well, that'll just about do it for Council Connection this month. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please leave a message for us in the BSCB mailbox at 617-923-4519. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, inviting you to join us again in June when we return with another edition of Council Connection. Take care.